Welcome to another edition of the List of Right Fiction Podcast. We've got a great show for you all today about our favorite music spoof or satire movies. Before we get started, if you love the pod, please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe on your listening app. It helps us reach new listeners just like you. Also, be sure to check out our website, www.rightfiction.com, where you can find the Spotify playlist with all our picks that we mentioned in the pod, as well as the list that we'd say. Now, let's get to it. Well, we've covered biopics, we've covered soundtracks, we've even covered film scores, but we are not done quite yet. Sometimes our favorite artists and music genres are injected into the world of comedy with hilarious results. On this episode, we share our favorite musical movie spoofs, satires, and mockumentaries. And with that, let's get to the guys. First, of course, we have Mr. Adam Blonde Selleck, the podiatrist Zelensky. What's going on, man?
Hanging in.
All right. We got Freddie Bo Betty Berman. How are you, sir?
Happy Friday, gentlemen.
Yes. And world. It is Friday, and that's a lovely thing. Yep. Lovely thing. Yep. Brendan Meta, Patty McGinn. What's going on, man?
Oh, not much. I'm sitting here. I think I'll be feeling better after I finish my iced coffee.
Nice. You got that Turkish stuff?
No, not today. Just regular cold brew.
Right. We go to Brendan's house sometimes. For you know, recording and whatnot, and he makes this Turkish, what's it called?
It's just Turkish coffee. Yeah.
Oh, Turkish coffee. Mm-hmm. I recommend it out there in this world. It is so awesome.
One of those metal coffee makers.
Yeah, it's copper. Then double. You stir in the fine grounds, and there's a mud that settles at the bottom. Yep. It's great.
It's so good. It is good so stuff. Good. And of course, there's me. There's Aaron, the John Stockton of podcasts, a.k.a. Go ahead, Adam.
Teeth of corn.
The teeth of corn. And so we're all here today. We have an interesting topic to discuss. Was this an easy topic for you guys to kind of come together with your picks, or was it hard? So I'm going to go to you, Freddie, man. Was it hard to pick, easy to pick? What do you think?
Both. I didn't have too much trouble with my three picks, but I ran into a little trouble with my honorable mentions, because by that time, you know, a lot of the picks, classic picks, were taken. I mean, there's a lot of music, there's a lot of spoofs, and there's a lot of satire, but there isn't a whole lot of music spoof satire. You know what I mean? There's like maybe just enough for someone to make a good list. But for someone's, it becomes a little difficult.
Yeah, I hear you. And Adam, I guess this was your topic. So kind of what made you think about this topic to kind of throw into the mix?
We've talked about, you know, scores. We've talked about biopics. And this was kind of one of the other puzzle pieces of the, of the niche of music movies is that, you know, because when we were doing the biopics, and I the first thing that comes to mind for me, because I'm a comedy nerd, is that I started thinking, this movie, I'm like, nah, I mean, that's not exactly a biopic per se. It's more like a joke. So I'm like, maybe there'll be something down the line. This is what, number 43, you know, you got to kind of, you know, bounce around a little bit to keep things fresh.
Yeah, for sure. What about you, Brendan, man? Was this easy or hard for you?
I didn't find it to be all that difficult, because there are, if you stop to think about it, there are a lot of movies in this genre, especially depending on how you define the genre. But to Adam's point, we talked about this in the biopics episode, like I sometimes find it funny and or cringy, some sort of degree of that scale, when actors and directors try to depict real musicality. And so in this genre of spoof and satire, it can be a little more, you can be a little more lenient with how you are depicting real events.
Yeah,
leaning towards like unintentional spoof.
Sure, exactly. Yeah.
The unintentional comedy is some of the best.
Yeah, when, what's his name, Rolf the dog is hitting the piano keys, you're like, he's not really playing that.
You sure? Are you sure? Did you read that?
I mean, he's not really playing it, is he? Yeah. So anyway, on that note, what do you say we get to it, guys?
All right.
All right, Adam. What's going on, man? What is your top three favorite spoof or satire musical films?
All right. To kick it off here, actually, I'm fairly contemporary in my choices, but the first one is from the magical year of 1994 of my teenage youth, Airheads.
One more.
Right.
Who'd win in a wrestling match, Lemmy or God?
Lemmy.
God.
Wrong, dickhead. Trick question. Lemmy is God.
Come on. With Brendan Fraser, Steve Buscemi, and Adam Sandler, plus countless other names, depicting a fictitious band, the Lone Rangers. And then at number two, I have Jack Black and Kyle Gass, Tenacious D, The Pick of Destiny.
They are the best band ever, period. Ladies and gentlemen, Tenacious D.
That was an enjoyable one from 2006. And then number one, which is a point of contention amongst my Langhorne local friends, thing is that because they think pop star Never Stop, Never Stopping from 2016.
We killed Seal. He's dead.
He's dead. Connor for real is being sued by R&B singer Seal. For
Why would he do that to Seal? I don't even know.
It's a little too much love, but I find it fantastic. So I put it up there at number one.
Very excellent, cool. Sir. Very excellent.
Good picks.
Bo Betty.
Yes, sir.
You're up now.
All
man.
Right.
What are your
right.
top three picks, sir?
Number three, 1978, The Ruddles, All You Need Is Cash.
Everything in England in the 1950s was very boring, but popular music was particularly boring. There were the MacGuffins. There was Nigel Papp. There was Jimmy Glimmer.
Obviously, a takeoff parody of The Beatles. And number two, 2003, A Mighty Wind.
The covers were printed in two colors instead of four, mm-hmm. which I noticed
yeah.
was a...
Yeah. And they had no hole in the center of the record, so a lot
no,
of the,
you'd have to provide
the,
it
the people complained.
Parody of the folk scene, as seen through the eyes of, I guess it was the same people that, or some of the same people that did This Is Spinal Tap.
It's Christopher
yep,
Guest.
Yep,
it.
Yep. Yeah. And my number one is Walk Hard.
Me! I'm halved! Oh, we should listen to Paul.
Dewey, I'm cutting half pretty bad. In case y'all don't make it, then you have to be double great for the both of us.
Dewey Cox yeah, story. Basically a parody of Johnny Cash, Walk the Line. Right? Isn't that Walk the Line?
That and Ray. It was kind of like a parody of the those hot biopics.
Right. So there you have it. Those are my three.
Very nice, sir. Meta, we're going to go to you. And you got the quintessential pick here coming up soon. Let's give it to the people here.
Okay. My third pick, I went with Tom Hanks's directorial debut, 1996, That Thing You Do.
Eerie Band's got a new record out. Just won the Mercyhurst Talent Show a couple of weeks ago. This is Erie's own Home Leader!
My second pick went with 1 year earlier, 95, with Empire Records, directed by Alan Moyle.
So is this how your life's gonna be now, huh? You're just gonna screw every has-been until your tits fall down and they don't want you anymore?
Well, at least I don't hide what I am. Right,
clearly, I had a crush on Liv Tyler, if you can see the thread there. And my number one pick, 1984, the granddaddy of all musical satires, This Is Spinal Tap, directed by Rob Reiner.
This is the piece?
Yes.
Are you telling me that this is it? This is scenery? Have you ever been to Stonehenge?
No,
the
I haven't been to Stonehenge.
The triptychs are 20 feet high. You can stand four
yes,
men
that's on. The one. I'm sure when everybody saw this topic, they were like, oh, yeah, they got to have Spinal Tap in here somewhere.
Yeah, my fingers couldn't move fast enough when we were <don't know.
laughs> You were the first to it, I guess. All right, great. So this is me, okay. Aaron Brown, and I'm going to give my top
what
three
do you got?
Here.
What do you got?
And so my number three is from 1993, and it's a movie called CB4.
Do you glorify violence or advocate the use of guns as a way of solving a civil dispute? Okay, final question. Do you guys respect anything at all?
Not a goddamn thing.
Directed by Tamara Davis. And it's a very interesting movie. Chris Rock was the lead in it, and it's a very funny film. And I saw it a long time ago, and it kind of stuck with me, you know, ever since. And it's pretty
funny. Awesome movie.
Yeah. My number two pick, I'm not sure if it's a satire or a spoof, but I love it.
Neither.
And it's called The Muppet Movie.
Our gentle morning melodies have attracted wandering admirers.
Hey, who are you guys?
We am, is, are, and be they whom as are known as the Electric Mayhem.
1979, directed by James Frawley. And I do have, we'll talk about this in the discussion section of how I think it actually might fit in there, but. We'll leave that for the discussion. And then my number one pick is School Days, 1988. All right. I think it's Spike Lee's second directorial film.
Second joint.
And it's a wonderful movie. It even has a real musical connection in there with Branford Marcellus playing one of the lead roles. And we'll talk about a little bit more about that a little later, too. So that's my top three picks. And with that, we're going to take a short break and come back with loads of discussion. So hold on. And we are back. And so in picking my movies for this topic, the thing that I kept running up into is, well, how do you define, you know, a satire movie or a spoof movie? What is that definition? Like, are they different? Are they the same? Freddie, I know you had some thoughts on this. What are your
All
thoughts,
right.
man?
Well, I'm just going to read the definition of both. Okay. So I think we should include parody in this conversation as well. Parody takes a specific literary work, or in this case, film work or event.
Musical.
Yeah. And exaggerates its form and language, often replacing serious subjects with silly ones. So Walk Hard is a parody to me. You know what I mean? Spoof is where a writer takes the conventions of a well-known genre and pokes fun at them. Finally, satire uses ridicule, exaggeration, and irony to comment on society, religion, and politics. So any one of those will work. The main thing is our topic was to include music.
Right.
I'm not sure that all these movies are about music. However, the Muppet movie is about the entertainment business. So I'll give it that. But it's not necessarily about music, even though it's a musical. You know what I mean?
Sorta. I mean, if it's about the entertainment business and they're part of their shtick was music. Actually, I didn't even think about that when I picked it. I was just kind of thinking about Dr. Teeth, and I was like, oh, Dr. Teeth is a parody of
Dr. John.
I was like, that was my key thing. I was like, that's all I had.
Yeah.
So when you talk about that as being an entertainment, I was like, oh, I never thought about that. Way to go.
Yeah.
I was just thinking Dr. John, Dr. Teeth. That's as far as I went.
I mean, like I said, I think we all pretty much nailed it on our top three. The honorable mentions, which we'll get to later, are a little murkier, I think. Right. Mine included, one of mine anyway,
I just totally bailed on those. I'm just like, I don't got it.
It's hard.
You abstain.
You know, like Waiting for Guffman, is that a musical? Is that about the music industry?
Oof, that's more just about like casting and stuff, right?
No. You're thinking of the other one about the film industry. Waiting for Guffman is about musical theater.
Yeah. But
oh, yes, I'm right. Getting ahead of myself with the. All right.
Are we at the 50-minute mark?
I guess. It's, you know, when I'm thinking of musicals, well, the same thing for one of my. I mean, does it have a soundtrack? Is that part of the deal? How can it be a musical spoof or satire without a soundtrack?
I don't know. Adam, what do you got, man?
Oh, boy. You're like, nah, you go.
We're raising some tough questions, some tough love, like, real deal questions here.
Or do you mean soundtrack in general, or does Spotify have to have it?
No, I think some of these have soundtrack in general.
Which one doesn't have a soundtrack?
One of my, I'm getting ahead of myself. We haven't gotten to the honorable mention.
Hold on, guys. If we're talking about, you know, musical satires or spoofs or whatever, let's go to the top pick. Let's go to the
gold standard.
Yeah. My bad.
The one that everybody thinks of.
You are correct, sir. Kind of
lay the groundwork here. And that was you were quick on the draw on that one, Brendan.
I was.
So kind of let's give everyone kind of the background on like what Spinal Tap is about and kind of why it's recognized, at least in musician circles, as the one of this kind of, you know, film genre.
Right. So within the film itself, it's done in the style of a mockumentary, so it already gives away what it's doing. It's poking fun, really, with the style of the filmmaking. And so it's all shot through these like interviews and sort of behind the scenes of this fictional band, and it pokes fun of rock bands, the big hair bands of the time. It came out in 84, so it was right in there with like some of these bands that were aging and sort of trying to find their relevance. And it pokes fun at every musical rock star cliche that you can imagine. And all of the references have lasted on through the years. I mean, this one goes to 11. Everyone knows that. Even if you don't even know Spinal Tap, you know this one goes to 11.
Right.
And the characters are so ridiculous. The songs are so ridiculous. It's biting satire. I mean, it's like to the umpth degree. And so it's turned into the gold standard. I mean, I think without This Is Spinal Tap, you don't have more cowbell. You don't have so many of these other movies and moments that we're talking about.
The mini Stonehenge.
I mean,
I've actually seen that.
I mean, it's all so good.
I've seen that thing. There's a club in Milwaukee that is, it's the name of the hall, Shank Hall, which is the name of the place that one of the places they played. And they actually have the mini Stonehenge pinned.
The mini Stonehenge.
Yes, pinned to the curtain on the stage.
Oh, that's funny.
Shank Hall.
And they actually played like Christopher Guest, Michael McKean. They all actually played.
They did.
Yeah,
they
stage,
did. Right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's a cool twist to it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
And so for musicians, guys, right, is this like a requirement? Before you get your first gig or something, like do you have to like, all right, like here's your homework, guy or gal or they. Adam, what do you got?
I think that's more of like, and especially a lot of the what I like most about these types of movies is that like you have to be able to like not take yourself too seriously as a musician. It's like that's more. I think these things are just more of like reminders on like how ridiculous, you know, it all is. The whole journey of music. It's a, you know, a whole barrel of fun, and you shouldn't be, you know, taking it way, way too seriously. And that thing, I know it's not a requirement, but I think it's more of like kind of a check to musicians to like, okay, yeah, like be careful how, you know, important you feel up there. Sometimes you could be like, you could be coming off looking like a little bit of a doofus.
What do you got, Brendan?
Yeah, that, and also it's kind of a way, it's a bonding thing too. If you've seen Spinal Tap and you know the jokes, you know the bits, and then when you observe them being a musician and then those things happen to you in real life, it's just, it's funny. It's like The Onion, but not The Onion. You know, it's like, this actually happened. Like, I've talked to people who have had the experience of being backstage and not being able to find the stage and walking through hallways endlessly to find, I mean, it's just, it's, you know, stranger than fiction, you know, it's just, yeah. It's so funny. And so Spinal Tap perfectly hits upon those jokes and those moments in a way that is relatable, but also pushed so ridiculous that it's funny.
Right. Well, you know, the scene where, I guess they're stuck in the tube on stage.
Yeah,
I mean, that's directly out of an Earth, Wind & Fire show. Like, they,
no way.
Yeah, they did that thing. They hooked up with a famous magician, I forget which one, and he choreographed the opening of the show. And I'm sure that must have happened at least on one or two nights. Somebody got stuck in their pod, you know, the flash went off, and there they are, you know.
Right.
Well, didn't you two get stuck in a lemon too at one time? And that's post Spinal Tap, right?
I think so. Yeah.
These things they're happen. In a lemon or something like
and
that.
And then the whole thing with always losing drummers. I mean, I think we.
It's a great Grateful Dead reference. All their keyboard players.
Yeah.
The keyboard players. Yeah. And then they push it. The what makes it so funny is they push it so far where like the one guy just spontaneously combusts on stage.
Yeah, go on. That could just be a whole Spinal Tap thing. Brendan, while we're still kind of on your picks, I wanted to touch on That Thing You Do, which is kind of almost a different type of thing. What do you kind of like, it's like a slant to like, you know, it's like almost a Beatles kind of, it's like a fake Beatles. So yeah, what draws you to that movie?
I mean, that was one of the first ones to come to mind, and I didn't know how you guys would feel about it. So always part of my mission is just sort of stoking the flame a little bit to see if I can get a rise out of you guys. But honestly, for me, like That Thing You Do is a movie that doesn't take itself seriously at all. And it's got so many cliches in it that it, to me, crosses over into spoof.
Because
you've got the band itself are like all of these one-dimensional archetypal characters. Oh, the lead singer is moody and there's a woman issue. And then the drummer would much rather be pursuing his jazz career. And then the bass player is just like out to lunch all the time. And then the first manager they meet in the small town like operates out of an RV. I mean, it's just so ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like you can't see it any other way.
And the songs are good.
Yeah.
The songs are really
good. It really is the characters of like, you know, these archetypes.
Totally. Yeah. Complete characters.
I would say that's more of a spoof. For sure.
I think so.
For sure.
And like, and then moving on to my other pick with Empire Records, similarly, like, the characters are very one-dimensional. They are all stereotypes of within the movie. And then for those that know the movie, you've got the character of Rex Manning, who is a total satire on like a very moody rock star, like a Neil Diamond or something. And his ego can't fit in the building with him. And it's just like, that's one of the funniest moments in the whole movie.
It's Rex Manning Day.
Exactly.
Yeah. Actually, I mean, I don't know, you know, a lot of these movies that we have here, but Empire Records is like almost second to Spinal Tap, at least in my mind, as far as these kinds of
for the 90s kids. It's a
big, yeah, that's definitely the like, and I guess That Thing You Do, I know it and I've seen it many times. I've never thought about it in these terms, actually, until you kind of.
I am like drawn. I have like a magnetism towards That Thing You Do. If it's like back when I had cable. If you just saw it on one of the channels, it's one of those you just have to pop on. And also the one guy you didn't mention in the characters, the Steve Zahn's character, over the top, like, you know, just almost borderline playboy, almost a little not self-aware guy. I don't know. I like Steve Zahn's work, and I think he really elevates that cast a little bit.
He does one-dimensional characters really well. That's kind of his thing. They're one-dimensional, but you still kind of love them in his portrayal. But I want to go to Freddie's point too, because I haven't listened to the soundtrack for That Thing You Do in quite a while. And so in listening to our playlist, the songs are good.
Really good.
But they sound so 90s to me now. Like they sound like 90s trying to sound 60s.
Gotcha.
Like completely over the top. It's like, that's all I hear.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting because when I saw the movie for the first time, it just felt very period to me.
Right.
And now hearing, especially listening to the soundtrack removed from the picture, it doesn't sound period at all to me.
Right.
And one of the best fictional band names inside a fictional band name in Captain Geach and the Shrimp Shack Shooters. I mean, that's just
That is just an amazing band name. During the, you know, the Frankie and Annette beach movie or whatever they were taping-esque beach movie they were taping.
Now, yeah. I want to pose a question in terms of movies that we didn't pick and throw one to Adam. So I know why I didn't pick 200 Motels, because I find it to be unwatchable, but I'm wondering why you didn't pick it.
Why I didn't pick it? Well, I've only funny story. Funny you mentioned that. I watched that. I might have been grounded one weekend back in high school, and I might have ingested something and watched that by myself.
Wow.
And yikes. And let's just say, yeah, you know, and that really
scarred you for
so
life.
It's so weird. It didn't scar me. I became a bigger Zappa fan, but there's just something about 200 Motels that just kind of, with Zappa's humor, I like it in certain doses. In the feature film dosage, I it didn't quite hit me like a, you know, his conventional as he can be albums are, but you know, yeah, with Ringo as Zappa and the performances, I think. I don't know. I just lean more on the contemporary. Just it's not like you're not like what we've been doing, going through all these movies. There's like little catchphrases and little this is and that. So I'm not picking up a lot of that from 200 Motels, at least from my angle.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, would you go so far to say that Zappa was out of his element making a movie like that?
I think maybe, you know, stretching his dollar a little bit, perhaps. Yeah.
And so let's stay with you, Adam.
Okay.
Because a couple of your picks were, I guess, more modern.
Yes.
Except for Airheads, you know, tell another, us about
another 90s classic.
Another 90s classic, I guess. But tell us a little bit about your picks and kind of how they fit into, you know, the musical satire world.
Well, I'll touch upon Airheads just really quick, just because we were in this little 90s thing with the Lone Rangers. Brendan Fraser as the lead guitarist and Steve Buscemi as the bassist. Adam Sandler as a drummer, right around his like emergence into the. Like the band that wants to get the airplay, and they just kind of go way over the top with pepper sauce, fake Uzis trying to take over the radio station. And you got Michael McKean making another appearance as like the douchey exec ready to change it over. And Joe Mantegna in a role that like isn't really typical for him. And
he was great.
And yeah, just they just really, you know, especially even the 90s, the whole record deal thing was still kind of a big thing. And they really, Airheads really kind of touched upon the frustration of musicians a little bit, you know, if you go way too deep on it. But then like Tenacious D, you get like Jack Black, who is just great with comedy. You know, like you ever hear with like High Fidelity, like the movie High Fidelity, like he didn't have a script, like he just did everything like off the cuff.
I didn't know that.
Wow. He's just a talent, and then he's also, you know, what is it like? What's that whole line? It's like every rock star wants to be an actor, and every comedian wants to be a rock star, and every rock star thinks he's a comedian or something. Line something like that, and Jack Black is actually both. And, right. And the, you know, they created this fake origin story with him and Kyle Gass, and it's this, you know, that's this borderline hyperbolic like rock god thing Jack Black does, and it's just kind of, you know, he does it very endearingly. So that's with that pick, and then going on to pop star. Never Stop, Never Stopping. It's the comedy troupe, the Lonely Island, and they you know, mainly Andy Samberg and a couple of his buddies. But they, with this, that's just this great, like, you know, group where the guy goes solo and just gets so full of himself, and then just kind of gets checked when he has a really crappy album, and it's just, I think that they really put that well together. Yeah, Brendan.
Well, so in referencing your top two picks, Pop Star and Tenacious D, when I was listening to our Spotify playlist, had it on shuffle and just trying to kind of familiarize myself with some of the stuff I didn't know, those two picks, out of everything else, I was laughing in the car while I'm like out doing stuff. I was like chortling to myself. And then switching to one of Freddie's picks with the Ruddles, where's the comedy? And it's like Eric Idle. I want to be laughing my face off, but I didn't find, at least just on the songs, I didn't find where the comedy was.
Right. Well, yeah, I think the comedy.
What was that like?
Comedy was more of the situation of how, you know, the Beatles became psychedelic. You know, they went from these fan. Those songs, they were actually trying to write Beatle-like music.
They almost did it too well.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's a famous interaction. I think it was between Lennon and Eric Idle, where he said, basically saying, it wouldn't be coming from me, but you really better watch out for that one song, because it's, you know, the record label and the publisher might come after you. It's really close to one of our songs.
Right.
And that's a real conversation that happened.
So that's a great point. And I want to foreshadow, hopefully, to a future episode about like lawsuits in music. But if you think of that, like, because some of those Ruttles songs were pound for pound, like very much Beatles songs. And so there's this whole exemption that you get when you are doing a parody, musically speaking, where it's not copyright infringement. And so I wonder, I didn't do the research on it, but I wonder if the Ruttles almost kind of helped set the bar for that in like a legal precedent perspective, because those songs, if you weren't paying attention, you'd think they're Beatles songs for sure.
Yeah. And I'm not totally sure, there's more, I'm kind of throwing this out, but we all know George Harrison started really getting in with the Monty Python crew. Is it after this?
So here's what I do know. Harrison was on board. Lennon thought it was funny. Mm-hmm. Ringo, whatever. Just portray me correctly. I don't know. From what I understand, Paul was at first like no comment, and then I think Linda thought it was funny, so Paul thought it was funny.
He got
that's
over
what
it.
I that yeah sounds about that's right. what I yeah. sounds about that's right. what I've read.
Now, Aaron, while we're still kind of, I mean, we dipped back a little bit to dip back to the 90s. What's your experience with CB4? I'm a huge fan of CB4.
Great movie.
Well, I just saw this movie when it first came out, like a long, long time ago. And actually, when I saw it, I think I had to like sneak and see it because my parents wouldn't let me see it. And it was like back in the gangster rap days. And like my parents were like, oh, no, you're not going to watch any of that. Listen to this Earth, Wind & Fire. There's Frankie Beverly featuring Maze, which I
nice.
Yeah, but I was like, I snuck and watched it. And at first I thought, I don't know anything about satire. And I was like, oh, wow, this is a movie about gangster rap. This is going to be crazy.
It's like a documentary.
Oh, my God. And I saw it and I was like, wait a second. This doesn't make any sense. And my brain couldn't like compute at first. But then, you know, coming back to it later and later, it's like, oh, this is really funny. This is really, really funny.
Yeah. I mean, you weren't familiar with like Chris Rock before that or?
I mean, a little bit, but like back then I didn't really know who any of the, like,
I guess he was more just Saturday Night Live at this point. And he had Charlie Murphy in there as a,
I did. Yeah. I noticed. I was like, wow, Charlie Murphy's back then too. Like, yeah, it was very cool. Yeah. And back then, like Saturday Night Live, I think it was probably past my bedtime or something.
That's like,
and, yeah. Freddie, what do you got, man?
I just realized nobody picked Fear of a Black Cat.
Oh yeah.
That's a great,
that's a good one too. Yeah.
Literally a mockumentary.
Yeah, I haven't watched that in forever. That's more about like the Public Enemy angle. I think
CB4
is more
on a Public Enemy.
Fear of a Black Planet.
Yes, exactly.
And then CB4 was more of the NWA direct parody, and then the whole like controversy of the parental advisory, like getting shows shut down and stuff because of explicit content. Maybe a little Two Live Crew in there, perhaps.
Well, the band in Fear of a Black Cat is called NWH.
Okay.
Yep.
With
Brandon, what do you
with
got?
Hats.
I'll leave it there. Well, yes. So, gentlemen with hats.
Like, sort of piggybacking on that, like how these movies and the characters sometimes resemble a little like too close to real life. And so, Freddie, A Mighty Wind, I feel like we all know like some of these old head folkies that are like, I mean, I feel like I have met the Eugene Levy character so many times.
At the Philadelphia Folk Fest, maybe.
And it's like just the brilliance of the whole Christopher Guest style comedy, where it's like it's relatable enough, like we were saying with Spinal Tap, but then they find a way to just push it to the absurd and to find to like make the joke out of it. But yeah, I was just wondering, like, Freddie, in your experience, like, like with the whole folk movement happening and then the resurgence of the folk movement, which is kind of like A Mighty Wind was kind of depicting in the mockumentary, like if you had experience with some very real life characters like that?
Absolutely. I mean, as well, not necessarily one-on-one experience, but you know, like you said, I can totally see, oh, there's the Peter, Paul, and Mary group. You know what I mean? There's the DJ. There's like the Gene Shea kind of guy. You know what I mean? Like all those characters are, I'm sure, based on real people. And they also, didn't they do Waiting for Guffman? Same crew.
Yeah, so that's the Christopher Guest point. Yeah.
And Best in Show, which is not a music. Not a music thing, but
classic.
But
yeah, it's like the best Fred Willard you can get. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah.
And I'll say that Eugene Levy has the funniest eyes in all of comedy. He can just make me laugh by his eyeballs.
Now that Marty Feldman's gone, right?
Yeah, right. That's fair.
Aaron,
So I wanted to kind of get to, I guess, one of my picks, and that's my top pick, School Days, which is I felt actually very proud of picking this one because it's like totally satire. I like nailed the satire part of this one because I was very unsure about all the picks and just how to do this. And for me, this was a really important movie for me coming up and seeing how like college life could be, especially at kind of a black university.
Sure.
And talks about a lot of things that, you know, satires, you know, a lot of things like in the black community, like colorism and elitism, political activism, female self-esteem, just a whole bunch of stuff. And it really does a wonderful job. And music is kind of interwoven throughout the entire, thing with, Stevie Wonder writing the song, I Can Only Be Me. For Keith John, and I believe even what's his name, Terrence Blanchard, I believe, was doing some of the music or playing some of his stuff, of course the tie that brings it all together is the song EU was the song Doing the Butt from
Marcus
EU.
Miller, welcome
Marcus
back.
Miller,
the butt guy. He returned.
The butt guy was in this film, and I definitely recommend everybody kind of checking that out.
He's mentioned on this pod more than anyone.
Almost.
It was a great movie. I remember seeing that when it came out.
Yeah, that's been a while for me on that one, but that's one I want to definitely revisit. And it's the there's that line of demarcation between Larry and Lawrence Fishburne, and he was still Larry at this point. So
yes. Yes. And like I mentioned before, there's a Branford Marsalis actually plays one of the characters, and it's pretty awesome. Going to my other pick, which I was super unsure about, and Freddie kind of gave me the okay about the Muppet movie, 1979.
Did he?
I don't know.
Maybe he did it. Freddie, would you give us the verdict?
First of all, I spoke too prematurely about our honorable mentions, and for that, I apologize. And I guess this is
buzzer.
This is before I read, or was it after I read, the definition of parody, spoof, satire. So in that case, I take it all back. I guess these all fall into one or other of the categories. I think it's as all the good movies were picked, that what we were left with is maybe a little less on the what I consider music, you know what I mean, scale, as opposed to like pop music or rock.
Real quick, I just want to interject and say, Freddie, you win the Brendan Meta McGeehan Award for changing of the rules.
Backsliding.
Like mid-pod today. So you win that
meta
award.
Trophy, you get like a little meta trophy.
A little meta trophy of the day.
And then you got to give it back.
Right.
You've evolved right in front of our eyes.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, this is amazing. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I don't know what's happening right now. What's going on here, guys?
I don't know.
It's one of those trophies that's like a little gold toilet.
Oh man. I love that this is my legacy.
But Freddie, staying with you, man. Like, tell us a little bit about your number one pick, Walk Hard: The Dewey Cox Story.
I mean,
I've actually never seen it, guys.
I was just gonna say, you gotta watch it. It's great. I'll just leave it at that. There's the character development is incredible. Without giving too much away, you know, one of the characters has a vicious drug problem, and he's always trying to get the other guy to partake with him. It's
Tim Meadows. Yes, that's the Tim Meadows.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's great. It's a great movie.
It's basically Walk Hard and Ray parodied in there, but then like John C. Reilly as
it's
the main
more,
character.
Kind it's of go- more Walk Hard, I think.
Yeah, except for like the Ray, the drug when he's trying to get rid of a drug addiction, and then just like he needs more blankets. He's out. I'm hot. Less blankets. I'm cold and I'm hot. And then the nurse is like, he needs more blankets and less blankets.
And Jack Black plays Elvis with a very small cameo. That's hilarious. Right. I'm sorry, Jack Black.
All right, you guys.
No, Jack Black is Paul McCartney in that. Jack Black is Paul McCartney.
Right, and how little they resemble the characters that they are portraying. Right. Satirized.
And then he goes through his Brian Wilson phase, and he's like 100 more didgeridoos, and he's like jumping on a trampoline on acid for like 3 weeks. You know, it's the other Ray one is where like the you know, his brother gets sawed in half by him as a kid, and the dad keeps going, the wrong kid died, and then it's just like this haunting him for the whole movie.
I think Johnny Cash lost a brother too at a young age, so
that's. Yeah, they were doing that.
Both of them, really. You know, the more we talk the more we talk about this, the more other movies are popping up. Like, would School of Rock work as a fit as a satire?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, definitely. It's like a fictitious creation of the Paul Green
exactly.
School of Rock. Yeah. Yeah.
I think so. I want to say, before we leave Walk Hard, that movie for me, so like, it may not seem like it based on everything I've said so far, but I really like have a kind of low tolerance for this genre of movies. Like, I don't know. Do you guys ever return to these? I see them once and I'm like, okay, especially Walk Hard. If I remember correctly, if it is not a long movie, it felt like a long movie. And it's not that I wasn't laughing. It was just like, all right. Like, yes, right. It's silly. It's over the top.
Spinal Tap would be the only one that I think I've have seen more than once.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they kind of do their thing. You get the jokes and then you move on. Yep. I just it's not, this isn't even really my favorite genre of movies or musical movies, just because I don't know, like it doesn't always do it for me.
Right.
And
right.
I just think they can wear out their welcome pretty easily.
Well, actually, I do want to say, you hearing you say that, Brendan, it kind of makes so much sense to me that you would say that. I would almost think it'd be weird if you were like, oh my God, thank you guys so much for bringing this topic up. I mean, just your personality, you tend to be a little bit more like, I want to say serious, but serious.
Yeah.
But seriously,
I've been told that, yes.
So I mean, to be like, to hear you like be like, oh my God, this is blah, blah, blah. It's like it doesn't fit your personality, at least to my view. What do you think, Adam?
I mean, what about Brendan's uber seriousness?
Yes about Brendan's uber seriousness.
Yes, I agree. But this was my choice, and this is more of my thing. Because when I'm given the age of my kids, my TV access is not much, and so you know, anytime I put on the TV is to kind of like soften, cool my brain. Like I'm not looking to elevate at that point. I'm looking to like, you know, melt into the couch and just kind of let things be. And that's why I tap a lot of these movies a lot. Although School Days, I haven't tapped in a long, long time, so that's one I definitely have to get back to.
Yeah, but that's not, you're not going to melt into the thing. You're just going to be like,
well, that one is kind of, it's kind of the package where it's got like the satire, but yeah, it's got some serious themes, more so than the other ones. And the Muppet movie has my favorite version of Rainbow Connection by Kermit the Frog.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's fantastic.
Treasure.
Yeah. All right, just that movie, Moving Right Along. Oh man, come on. But that you bring up an excellent point, Adam, about like, you know, with these kinds of movies, it's kind of like, how do you, I mean, like, what is your tolerance? Like, where's your brain at? Like, do you want to just kind of like, you know, just watch stuff and like laugh and not really think too much? Or like, you know what I mean? Like, for me, a lot of times it's, you know, I just want to see some superhero stuff for the same reason. It's just like, I don't want to be thinking about like, oh, how did this person fly? I just wanted them to fly and punch the wall. And that's kind of my thing.
Not break it down to why.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Do some analysis about the commentary being presented to you.
Yeah. I mean, that's totally it. I mean, like, there's a lot of actually new superhero kind of movies out where it's like, they're digging into like, oh, well, why this superhero dude? I'm like, I don't care. Punch the freaking wall. Like, and I think for me, like, that's kind of, that's where I go to for these kinds of, you know, for these kinds of things in my life to like kind of, you know, not check out, but check out. And that's what I'm hearing from you, Adam. It's like they kind of exist in that space where like you're like, oh, I play music, I love music, but I don't want to be thinking about it. I just want to sit and like watch and like really enjoy it and not really. And when I get up to like do something, I don't want it lingering with me.
I don't want to have to pause the movie.
Yeah, I don't want to discuss it with my wife or anything. We don't have to make a discussion about what this was about in the wider context of the world. And like, yeah, I totally understand that.
I rack my brain on 100 things in 100 different directions all day. And I do like my share of documentaries, but you know, it all depends, and they just have to catch me at the right time. But yeah, when it's time to shut the brain down for a minute, these types of movies I really elevate to.
Yeah. So actually, on that note, we're going to take a short break and come back with our honorable mention picks. So hold on. And we are back, and we're going to give you guys some honorable mentions to kind of take you away, to leave with you for, you know, for just to research or whatnot over the course of the next week. But I want to go to my guy, Freddie Bo Betty, with his first honorable mentions.
Especially since I blew up the honorable mention category too early.
This is your punishment.
Oh,
this
God.
Constantly mentioned.
God. Well, this one honorable mention is from 1963, and it's kind of like a send-up of Elvis. I guess, you know, Beatles didn't really hit till 64, so Bye Bye Birdie.
You gotta be sincere.
What's wrong?
You gotta be sincere.
It's kind of send up of a Elvis type character and the teenage girls going crazy, and the soundtrack is really good and spot on for the times, you know. I highly recommend it if you're in the mood for some nostalgia. They kind of hit the nail on the head, actually. My other honorable mention, it's really a stretch, I think, in my opinion.
That's what we're here for. Honorable mentions are stretches.
Yeah, yeah. This 1967 movie called The Producers.
What is that, a handkerchief?
Nothing.
If it's nothing, why can't I see?
My blanket, my blue blanket, give me my blue blanket.
It's kind of based on Broadway. They find a play, a scheme for a play called Springtime for Hitler, a gay romp with Adolf and Evil. And it borders on, politically incorrect. So I guess, you know, if you're considering the Broadway thing as part of a musical send-up, then this is that.
Well, I am.
Okay, obviously. So, yeah, this was my stretch.
Gotcha. Well, we're going to go to the other guy that has two picks here. Patty, what do you got?
My first one, I went with the sequel to Get Shorty, which focuses on the music business and portrays it in one of the more ridiculous lenses that I've ever seen. And that's 2005 and Be Cool.
You call that a minute?
You only have to say, and I already know. I know.
I can't help it, man. Don't give me no gun, man.
With John Travolta, Uma Thurman, The Rock is in there, and it's just so ridiculous, but all centered around the music business and portraying as this fast-moving kind of mafioso light. And then my other honorable mention, I went with another Christopher Guest movie, Waiting for Guffman, 1996, which is all about like community theater and musical theater.
Well, we've traveled long and far today. We must let the women and children rest.
Don't you rest on our account, Daniel Potter. We women are just as strong and resilient as you men.
And if you've never seen it, it helps if you have ever participated and kind of know the world of community theater, musical theater, but the jokes are good. And again, the characters are scarily relatable.
Nice. And I'm going to go to myself here and give my, I have one honorable mention today. I wasn't sure if it was a satire, if it was a spoof, or it was a whatever. But I know they had music in it. I know it was sort of funny. And it came from off-Broadway stuff. And that is Little Shop of Horrors.
I beg your pardon?
Feed me!
Tui, you talked! You open your trap, you sing, and you sing.
Feed me, Crabhorn, feed me now!
And that was, I guess, released in 1986. Rick Moranis, Steve Martin, a whole bunch of wonderful, wonderful people in this movie, you know, about the little plant that was an alien. It was like eating people, and they had, you know, dance, singing in the background. And when I first saw it when as a kid, it scared the crap out of me. So I didn't understand any sort of satire or spoof, if there was any. And but it just hung with me. And so that's my little pick there. And, so we're going to go to we're going to finish off here with the guy that picked this topic to see if he has any gems for us to leave with us. Any thoughts? What do you got, Adam?
Corn teeth. I did come up with a couple.
We're for out there.
We're up for out there, corn. Yeah, actually, in talking with this, I really enjoyed this conversation. A couple more ideas came to mind, so I can throw a few last-second honorable mentions here. And one was Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Did I get a decaf today? Scott Pilgrim! What did you do with my sister?
So, what can I get you?
Is there anywhere you don't
Which is Michael Cera. And he kind of Beck wrote a lot of the songs in that for the fake band Sex Bob-omb. And then this one is just kind of thrown up as a thinker for later on, but I'm almost starting to feel like Almost Famous fits into this all of a sudden, because it is a series of cliches, more or less.
Yeah.
Groupie.
Groupie.
We are not groupies.
This is Penny Lane, man. Show some respect.
Groupies sleep with rock stars because they want to be near someone famous. We're here because of the music. We are band-aids.
She used to run
for my trademarked parting thought, and why I think this is always a good discussion, is there is no harder genre to do in the acting world than comedy, I believe, because making somebody laugh, large amounts of people laugh a lot, and keeping them laughing is a lot harder than just reading some serious lines. Like, comedy is an art I appreciate very, very much. And it's a tough world to do comedy. You got to be looking over your shoulder a lot. So I have a grand appreciation for people that can, keep an elevated game in comedy.
Would you say, Adam, that there is almost no line to walk, you know, harder than comedy?
Wow, that is, man, when you're on, you're on.
Swish.
Wow. You took the fire. You earned the fire there. That was great.
Sorry.
Talking for free.
Oh, man. I apologize. That's totally
no,
my
no,
fault.
That, hey,
totally
hey, you know what? When you have the thunder, when you have the thunder, you need to grab it.
And on that note, guys, we're going to call it a day. So on behalf of Freddie Bobetti Bourbon, behalf of Adam, the podiatrist, Blonde Selig Zielinski, Brendan, Patty, Meta McGeehan, I am Aaron Brown, John Stockton of Podcast, a.k.a. Go ahead, Adam.
Corn teeth.
That too. And we're going to be back next week with another episode for your ears. So have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Right, fiction.